We're continuing with the study of the Crucible article today, little ones. It's December 2nd, 2023, and the time is 22:59 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. Now, we finished also the book of 1 Samuel, so we'll be beginning the book of 2 Samuel today, continuing Jeremiah and Matthew. For those of you who are just joining us, we're studying the Crucible article called The Crucible of Credible Creed, published first in 2012, April 7th, I believe it was released. That can be found in part two of the Crucible article at the bottom of the page. While records matter, this is chapter one, paragraph two now, they might not always be everything, but without records, how may we value or test our beliefs? For example, it is seemingly well recognized that it is an achievement to win the Triple Crown of horse racing, as few horses, 11, have managed it, including Secretariat. Secretariat was a horse that in 1973 set time records in two of the races. He is considered one of the top thoroughbreds of all time. I would like to tell you the story of a winning horse race. It has been documented that a horse that was foaled in the country of Hungary in 1874 won 54 races across Europe and is evidently the greatest thoroughbred of all time. The story goes that Kinksum's sire, Cambuscan, was sold by Her Majesty Queen Victoria in 1873 to Hungarian interests. Out of the Hungarian mare Water Nymph, Kinksum grew up as a skinny horse with some 50 horses near the owner's home. When Kinksum had gone missing one night and was found with a band of gypsies, the owner had asked of the gypsy chief, "Why steal this horse when there were so many better to choose from?" "Because," said the gypsy, "the other horses may be better looking, but she was the best of the lot. She shall be a champion." Over the four seasons, she won all her races against both males and females at European racetracks, gaining 16 major wins. The horse was put to stud at age 7, having never lost. Age 13, she died after the birth of Kinks, her last foal. There is a statue of Kinksum at Kinksum Park in Budapest. And we see here is a picture, a painting, a painting of Kinksum by Emil Adam. Perhaps we can look at that. The painting. And we know that that was not long after or around the time of the life of Kinksum. We saw she was foaled in 1874. This painting is from 1887. She died at age 13. This painting is around the time of her death, but it's not clear how old she was as depicted here. Perhaps that's her at the very end of her life. Anyway, we will now begin our study of the Bible with a proverb for today, little children. It's from Proverbs 22, verse 5. Thorns and traps are in the way of the crooked one, he that is guarding his soul keeps far away from them. It's not even giving advice, it's simply describing what one does when he wants to guard his soul. Keeps far away from thorns and traps, according to that. Verse 5 of Proverbs 22, 2 Samuel chapter 1 now. We're beginning that, which would be called also, according to the Septuagint version of the Bible, Septuagint translation, this chapter is called 2 of Kings. And so 3 and 4 Kings would correspond to 1 and 2 Kings. In that case, with 1 and 2 being the Masoretic text and the translations thereof. And it came about after Saul's death, and when David himself had returned from striking down the Amalekites, that David continued to dwell at Ziklag 2 days. And it came about on the third day that, look, a man was coming from the camp from Saul with his garments ripped apart and dirt upon his head. And it came about that when he came to David, he at once fell down to the earth and prostrated himself. And David proceeded to say to him, where do you come from? At which he said to him, from the camp of Israel I have escaped. And David went on to say to him, How did the matter turn out? Tell me, please. To this he said, the people have fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen so that they died, and even Saul and Jonathan, his son, have died. Then David said to the young man that was telling him, how do you really know that Saul has died, and also Jonathan, his son? At this the young man that was telling him said, I unexpectedly chanced to be upon Mount Gilboa, and there was Saul supporting himself upon his spear, and look, the charioteers and the mounted men had caught up with him. When he turned back and saw me, then he called me, and I said, here I am. And he went on to say to me, who are you? At which I said to him, I am an Amalekite. Then he said, stand please over me and definitely put me to death, for the cramp has seized me, because all my soul is yet in me. That word cramp is also translated or used, it appears to be a different word. It's the word meaning giddiness in the Syriac version. The meaning is not certain in the Masoretic text of what the cramp is. Because all my soul is yet in me, so I stood over him and definitely put him to death. For I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. Then I took the diadem that was upon his head and the bracelet that was upon his arm, that I might bring them to my lord here. At this David took hold of his garments and ripped them apart. And so did all the men that also that were with him. And they began to wail and weep and fast until the evening over Saul and over Jonathan his son and over the people of Jehovah and over the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David now said to the young man that was telling him, where are you from? To which he said, I am the son of an alien resident, an Amalekite. Then David said to him, how was it that you did not fear to thrust your hand out to bring the anointed of Jehovah to ruin? With that, David called one of the young men and said, go near, smite him. Accordingly, he struck him down so that he died. Then David said to him, the blood guilt for you be upon your own head, because your own mouth has testified against you, saying, I myself definitely put the anointed of Jehovah to death. And David proceeded to chant this dirge over Saul and Jonathan his son, and to say that the sons of Judah should be taught, quote, the bow, end quote. Look, it is written in the book of Jasher, "The beauty, O Israel, is slain upon your high places. How have the mighty men fallen? Do not you people tell it in Gath? Do not announce it in the streets of Ashkelon, for fear that the daughters of the Philistines may rejoice, for fear that the daughters of the uncircumcised men may exult. You mountains of Gilboa, let no dew, let no rain be upon you, nor let there be fields of holy contributions, because there the shield of mighty ones was befouled, the shield of Saul, so that there was none anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of mighty ones, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul would not return without success. Saul and Jonathan, the lovable ones and the pleasant ones during their life and in their death, they were not separated. Swifter than the eagles they were, mightier than the lions they were. You daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with finery, who put ornaments of gold upon your clothing. How have the mighty ones fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan, slain upon your high places. I am distressed over you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant you were to me. More wonderful was your love to me than the love from women. How have the mighty ones fallen and the weapons of war perished?" And that's the end of 2 Samuel 1, which ended with the what appears to be, yes, it's the conclusion of that song which David announced at the beginning as being called the bow in verse 18, and also said it was written in the book of Jashar. Very interesting. We'll have to look for that corresponding part in the book of Jashar now, if it's the same as the book of Jashar, which is spelled slightly differently. Let's move on swiftly to our reading in Jeremiah for today, which is from chapter 36. "Now it came about in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, that this word occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah." The fourth year of Jehoiakim is about 605 BCE. The word from Jehovah occurred to Jeremiah, saying, "Take for yourself a roll of a book, and you must write in it all the words that I have spoken to you against Israel and against Judah and against all the nations since the day that I spoke to you, since the days of Josiah, clear down to this day. Perhaps those of the house of Judah will listen to all the calamity that I am thinking of doing to them, to the end that they may return, each one from his bad way, and that I may actually forgive their error and their sin." And Jeremiah proceeded to call Baruch, the son of Neriah, that Baruch might write at the mouth of Jeremiah all the words of Jehovah that he had spoken to him on the roll of the book. He wrote them on the roll of the book, that is. Then Jeremiah commanded Baruch, saying, "I am shut up. I am unable to enter into the house of Jehovah." He was a prisoner. "And you yourself must enter in and read aloud from the roll that you have written at my mouth the words of Jehovah in the ears of the people at the house of Jehovah in the day of fast, and also in the ears of all Judah who are coming in from their cities. You should read them aloud. Perhaps their request for favor will fall before Jehovah, and they will return, each one from his bad way. For great is the anger and the rage that Jehovah has spoken against this people." And Baruch, the son of Neriah, proceeded to do according to all that Jeremiah, the prophet, had commanded him, to read aloud from the book the words of Jehovah at the house of Jehovah. Now, it came about in the fifth year of Jehoiakim, that would be about BCE 604, the son of Josiah, Jehoiakim the son of Josiah, in his fifth year, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, in the ninth month, the fifth year of the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, in the ninth month, that is, the son of Josiah being, in this case, Jehoiakim. He had more than one son, and they were more than one of them kings also of Israel for some time, short or long, that all the people in Jerusalem and all the people that were coming in from the cities of Judah into Jerusalem proclaimed a fast before Jehovah. And Barak began to read aloud from the book the words of Jeremiah at the house of Jehovah in the dining room of Gemariah, the son of Shaphan, the copyist, in the upper courtyard, at the entrance of the new gate of the house of Jehovah, in the ears of all the people. And Micaiah, the son of Gemariah, the son of Shaphan, got to hear all the words of Jehovah from out of the book. At that he went down to the house of the king, to the dining room of the secretary, and look, there is where all the princes were sitting. Elishama, the secretary, and Delaiah, the son of Shemaiah, and Elnathan, the son of Achbor, and Gemariah, the son of Shaphan, and Zedekiah, the son of Hananiah, and all the other princes. And Micaiah proceeded to tell them all the words that he had heard when Barak read aloud from the book in the ears of the people. Then all the princes sent out to Barak Jehudi, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Cushi, saying, "The roll from which you read aloud in the ears of the people, take it in your hand and come." Accordingly, Barak, the son of Neriah, took the roll in his hand and came in to them. Then they said to him, "Sit down, please, and read it aloud in our ears." So Barak read aloud in their ears. Now it came about that as soon as they heard all the words, they looked at one another in dread. And they proceeded to say to Barak, "We shall without fail tell the king all these words." And Barak they asked, saying, "Tell us, please, how did you write all these words from his mouth?" Then Barak said to them, "Out of his mouth he kept declaring to me all these words, and I was writing in the book with ink." To me that seems like a very stupid question that they asked him. How did he write them down? I don't think that question was deserving of an answer, really. They were showing him disrespect. Finally, the princess said to Barak, "Go conceal yourself, you and Jeremiah, so that no one at all will know where you men are." Then they came into the king, to the courtyard, and the roll they entrusted to the dining room of Elishama the secretary, and they began to tell all the words in the ears of the king. So the king sent Jehudi out to get the roll. Accordingly, he got it out of the dining room of Elishama the secretary, and Jehudi began to read aloud in the ears of the king and in the ears of all the princes standing by the king. And the king was sitting in the winter house in the ninth month, with a brazier burning before him. Then it came about that as soon as Jehudi had read three or four page columns, he proceeded to tear it apart with the secretary's knife, pitching it also into the fire that was in the brazier, until all the roll ended up in the fire that was in the brazier. And they felt no dread, neither did the king, and all his servants who were listening to all these words ripped their garments apart. And even Elnathan and Delaiah and Gemariah themselves pleaded with the king not to burn the roll, but he did not listen to them. Further, the king commanded Jeramiel, the son of the king, and Seraiah, the son of Azriel, and Shelemiah, the son of Abdiel, to get Barak, the secretary, and Jeremiah, the prophet. But Jehovah kept them concealed. And the word of Jehovah occurred further to Jeremiah after the king had burned up the roll with the words that Barak had written at the mouth of Jeremiah, saying, "Take again for yourself a roll, another one, and write on it all the first words that proved to be on the first roll, which Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, burned up. And against Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, you should say, 'This is what Jehovah has said. You yourself have burned up this roll, saying, why is it that you have written on it, saying the king of Babylon will come and will come without fail and will certainly bring this land to ruin and cause man and beast to cease from it.'" That was what Jehovah said. "You yourself have burned up this roll, saying, why is it that you have written on it, saying the king of Babylon will come and without fail I can't read that properly. You yourself have burned up the scroll, saying, why is it that you have written on it, saying the king of Babylon will come without fail and will certainly bring this land to ruin and cause man and beast to cease from it? Therefore, this is what Jehovah has said against Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. He will come to have no one sitting upon the throne of David. And his own dead body will become something thrown out to the heat by day and to the frost by night. It's rather dim, this image. This camera seems dim. Let me brighten it up a bit. It seems better. Okay. Still not terribly bright. And I will call to account against him and against his offspring, Jehoiakim, that is, the king of Judah, and against his servants, their error, and I will bring upon them and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem and upon the men of Judah all the calamity that I have spoken against them, and they did not listen. Remember, he spoke all the calamity in the words of the book. So, not only would Jehoiakim not have anyone sitting upon the throne, but all the calamity would come upon him and upon his servants and also upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the men of Judah, everybody. And against, also it would come against the offspring of the king, Jehoiakim. And Jeremiah, that's what Jehovah said, and Jeremiah himself took another roll and then gave it to Baruch, the son of Neriah, the secretary, who proceeded to write upon it at the mouth of Jeremiah all the words of the book that Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, had burned in the fire. And there were added to them many more words like these. So the book got rewritten and more words were added. So the remarkable thing is also that Jeremiah was able to remember all the words of the first scroll that was burned up, apparently. That's quite a remarkable thing. Matthew chapter 10. So now Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits in order to expel these and to cure every sort of disease and every sort of infirmity. The names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, the one called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanean, and Judas Iscariot, who later betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent forth, giving them these orders: do not go off into the road of the nations, and do not enter into a Samaritan city, but instead go continually to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of the heavens has drawn near. Cure sick people, raise up dead persons, make lepers clean, expel demons. You received free, give free. Do not procure gold or silver or copper for your girdle purses, or a food pouch for the trip, or two undergarments, or sandals, or a staff. For the worker deserves his food. Into whatever city or village you enter, search out who in it is deserving and stay there until you leave. When you are entering into the house, greet the household, and if the house is deserving, let the peace you wish it come upon it. But if it is not deserving, let the peace from you return upon you. Wherever anyone does not take you in or listen to your words on going out of that house or that city, shake the dust off your feet. Truly I say to you, it will be more endurable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on Judgment Day than for that city on Judgment Day. Look, I am sending you forth as sheep amidst wolves. Therefore prove yourselves cautious as serpents and yet innocent as doves. Be on your guard against men, for they will deliver you up to local courts, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. Why, you will be hailed before governors and kings for my sake, for a witness to them and the nations. However, when they deliver you up, do not become anxious about how or what you are to speak, for what you are to speak will be given you in that hour. For the ones speaking are not just you, but it is the Spirit of your Father that speaks by you. Further, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and will have them put to death. And you will be objects of hatred by all people on account of my name, but he that But he that has endured to the end is the one that will be saved. When they persecute you in one city, flee to another, for truly I say to you, you will by no means complete the circuit of the cities of Israel until the Son of Man arrives. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his Lord. It is enough for the disciple to become as his teacher, and the slave as his Lord. If people have called the householder Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of his household so? Therefore do not fear them, for there is nothing covered over that will not become uncovered, and secret that will not become known. What I tell you in the darkness, say in the light, and what you hear whispered, preach from the housetops, and do not become fearful of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. But rather, be in fear of him that can destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. Do not two sparrows sell for a coin of small value? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground without your father's knowledge. Do not two sparrows sell for a coin of small value? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground without your father's knowledge. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Therefore, have no fear. You are worth more than many sparrows. Everyone then that confesses union with me before men, I also will confess union with him before my Father who is in the heavens. But whoever disowns me before men, I will also disown him before my Father who is in the heavens. Do not think I came to put peace upon the earth. I came to put not peace, but a sword. For I came to cause division with a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a young wife against her mother-in-law. Indeed, a man's enemies will be persons of his own household. He that has greater affection for father or mother than for me is not worthy of me. And he that has greater affection for son or daughter than for me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not accept his torture stake and follow after me is not worthy of me. He that finds his soul will lose it, and he that loses his soul for my sake will find it. He that receives you receives me also, and he that receives me receives him also that sent me forth. He that receives a prophet because he is a prophet will get a prophet's reward, and he that receives a righteous man because he is a righteous man will get a righteous man's reward. And whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water to drink because he is a disciple, I tell you truly, he will by no means lose his reward. That's the end of Matthew chapter 10. It's got about 5 minutes remaining in our video, and that's the end of our study of the scriptures for today. I think it's worth noting that in the modern day and age, of course, the internet is a new phenomenon compared to what was there in Jesus' time. So, had Jesus been living today, whether he would be commanding his disciples to go knock on people's doors and visit people in person is not as obvious as it might appear. It's not clear whether... That's not to say that the old ways are bad, or that it's not to say that modern technology makes walking obsolete or anything like that. Of course it doesn't. But the point is here that Jehovah's organization, you would think, would use the most modern technology, and would use the technology in whatever way was possible to accomplish the preaching work. And that makes it very clear to anyone who's actually experienced the opportunity and benefited from the opportunity of learning from the internet, knows that the preaching work can be accomplished by means of the internet. To a large degree anyway, if not entirely, but certainly it appears that the technology used in chapter 10 of Matthew is, although it's not obsolete, it's just very out of date. And that doesn't mean anything against these ideas in the Bible. It's not about those things, because there's a big distinction to be made between a believer and people who say that when we die, we're not going to go to heaven, or we're not going to have any hope after that, that death is the end of all things. They don't believe in the resurrection. They don't believe in the heavenly hope or the resurrection to an earthly hope to live forever on earth. So they don't believe in any of that because perhaps they've never heard of it. But also they just reject it because they're being told by other people to reject it, or they're being taught by skeptics, by people who don't study or have very little interest in spiritual things. And their faith has just completely gone away from them. But not only that, there are many people who talk about the Bible as though it's, not everyone, let's be clear about that, but many people who talk about the Bible as though it has no importance at all, or no real truth with regard to the hope of everlasting life. They just don't believe in everlasting life. But what is a better hope is the question, too. We might ask that. And there are other people, though, who also claim that the reality that we perceive is a simulation. They don't accept that the reality that we perceive is in any sense, I mean, of course, it could be created in such a way that it has some of the characteristics of a video game, or, I mean, the fact that a lot of what we perceive with our eyes and feel with our hands and feel with our bodies is not solid material. It's made up of these very tiny particles that are moving around rapidly, and they have electrostatic forces that make it feel like they're solid. When we put two surfaces together, it feels solid. But actually, it's just from the scientific viewpoint, it's not the truth, but the scientific viewpoint, it's electrostatic forces. Science, as we've already discussed in part one, cannot evaluate itself except by itself. So science is not the truth. But all these things that people use, they're trying to find answers only because they don't believe in the true God. That's the reason why they resort to even science in it. Although scientists very often believe in God, but those who resort to science as a substitute for faith in a creator, I mean, even those who talk about if the world's a simulation, someone had to make the simulation. So even those people have a need for a creator. Anyway, this is the end of the video for today. It's December 2nd, 2023, time at the time, 23:32 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. This is Crow, my beautiful wind-up chronograph. And this is Cassie, my digital electronic watch, on my behalf, saying bye for now.